This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The War on Terror Exposed. Who are the real terrorists? On July 15th at 2:30, 5 p.m., Lynn Stewart was sentenced by Judge John Codal to 120 months in prison. This was a resentencing from his original sentence of 28 months. Basically, he gave her the maximum 10 years for the count of material support to terrorism, 18 U.S.C. Section 2339A, the maximum having been 10 years at the time of Lynn's supposed violation of that act, which has since 2001 been upped to 15 years maximum. Judge Codal denies that he was giving the maximum sentence and based his findings on a contorted reading of various enhancement, terrorism enhancement descriptions, basically a concession to a rabid appellate court. Today on Taking Aim, we're going to discuss who are the real terrorists and who actually provides material support to terrorism, rather as what Lynn had done, provided a zealous defense of her client. Ralph?
Well, Maya, let me say from the beginning that the zealous defense of her client, Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, was an expose of the fact that the crimes of which he is accused, namely plotting to blow up landmarks in New York and involving himself in the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993, were crimes of the state, crimes of the FBI, crimes of the government, crimes of the rulers of the United States. And all the evidence shows that. And none of the evidence incriminates Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman. And consequently, the decision by the judge is a decision to bury alive the defending lawyer who exposes the truth and who by so doing incriminates the authorities themselves. That is Lynn's crime. And the crime of the judge and the crime of the Second Circuit is that of being stooges and implementers of the actual war on terror carried out by the terrorists themselves, as we shall document in the course of this program.
In the case of Omar Abdul Rahman and those also convicted in the Landmarks case, it was clear that there was an FBI informant who set up the action, and this was Emad Ali Salem, who created the activity and who taped the activity. Since then, it has been the FBI's role to create more such situations. And an important article written by Guy Lawson in Rolling Stone, February 7th, 2008, called The Fear Factory, exposes this as an ongoing procedure. The FBI, he writes, now has more than 100 task forces devoted exclusively to fighting terrorism. But is the government manufacturing ghosts? So what you want to do, the friend asked. A target? The wannabe jihadi replied, I want some type of city hall stuff, federal courthouses. It was late November 2006, and the 22-year-old Derek Sharif and his friend Jamil were hanging out in Rockford, Illinois, dreaming about staging a terrorist attack on America. The two men weren't sure what kind of assault they would pull off. All Sharif knew was that he wanted to cause major damage to wreak vengeance on the country he held responsible for oppressing Muslims worldwide. But his friend Jamil was an FBI accomplice, someone who had wanted to get his own sentence reduced. Sharif didn't even have the money that Jamil was requiring in order to purchase the weaponry, the hand grenades necessary to do any damage. And so the FBI accepted used, dysfunctional stereo equipment. It was an entire setup. Sharif didn't know that his brand new friend, the eager co-conspirator drawing him further into a terror plot, was actually an informant for the FBI. This taking place in the Northern District of Illinois was a project of the Joint Terrorism Task Force of the FBI, and it is going on throughout the country. The so-called terrorist cells turn out to be completely, entirely FBI setups of hapless victims. Ralph?
My Fear Factory is a documentation of over 100 task forces of the United States government and of the Federal Bureau of Investigation engaged in creating terrorist operations, funding them, arming them, facilitating them, and implementing them. Quote, enticed by Malik, Hussein soon found himself caught up in a government-concocted terror plot. Posing as an arms dealer, Malik told Hussein that a surface-to-air missile was needed for an attack on a Pakistani diplomat in New York. At trial, the judge brushed aside questions about why the government would be after Arif in the first place. He had no connections to anything. I am just a pizza man, the bewildered Hussein said at his sentencing. I make good pizza. Quote, the conspiracy was confected entirely by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The victims were sentenced to 15 years in federal prison.
Ralph, you're referring in that situation to the Albany pizza case, which took place in June of 2003. The FBI now devotes nearly two-thirds of its resources, some $400 billion that is accountable in the budget, to waging war on terrorism. The approach is setting up these fake situations supposedly to prevent terrorist attacks before they occur. So what the FBI is doing is busting up so-called homegrown terrorist cells in Oregon, Seattle, Detroit, Miami, Buffalo, New Jersey, New York, and in California. And yet these are homegrown terrorist cells that the FBI has created. The feds have accused 619 people as of the date when Guy Lawson was writing in 2008 of terrorist activity. This is since 9/11. And the FBI, Lawson writes, insists that this is making America safer. However, what is it making America safer from? This is the question. The Center on Law and Security at New York University of Law says only 10% of the 619 so-called terrorist cases that have been brought by the federal government have even resulted in convictions. We can say Lynn Stewart is the most famous of those. Look at what took place in Miami with the Liberty Six, the Liberty City Six, which originally was seven. Seven because the first defendant was acquitted in the first trial. It took three trials. The government prosecutor kept on filing the charges. There were two prior mistrials. During the third trial, the federal jurors reached verdicts for the remaining six Miami men who were charged with conspiring with Al-Qaeda to blow up the Sears Tower in Chicago and other major buildings, including FBI headquarters. It took more than 2 weeks of disrupted deliberations before the 12-member jury convicted five defendants and yet acquitted still another. The indictment had been four counts of conspiring to provide material support to a foreign terrorist organization. And again, in this Miami terror plot, which we had discussed on Taking Aim, it was clear that this was all a government setup. The Liberty City Seven had been seven members of a small Miami, Florida-based religious group that called itself the Seeds of David, or the Seeds of David. And in 2006, there was an FBI sting investigation. totally sting. It outraged the judge. It outraged the jury. And the jury deadlocked in the first trial. The jury deadlocked in the second trial. And the jury would have deadlocked in the third trial if the judge didn't persist until they reached a verdict. Ralph?
Maya, the Liberty Six or the Liberty Seven were accused of plotting to blow up the Sears Tower and the FBI headquarters. They never heard of the Sears Tower. They didn't know where the Sears Tower was located. They had to be shown pictures of the Sears Tower. They never heard of the FBI, let alone its headquarters. These were people of such political innocence that they were entirely susceptible to whatever fabrication was presented to them. They were solicited on that basis. They were manipulated on that basis. They were invented as figures in a plot on that basis. They had no connection to anything whatsoever, let alone with something called Al-Qaeda. From its inception, this is a fabrication of the United States intelligence services. This is not just a random single event. The Miami Liberty City farce is part of a process that has been proliferating across the United States. The Rolling Stone article, The Fear Factory, documents not one, not five, not ten, but hundreds of such fake conspiracies, all of them authored by the United States government, and in one-to-one and direct tandem and parallel to the framing of Sheikh Omar Abdulrahman, in one-to-one direct and immediate relevance to the reality that the authors of the Landmarks plot are the United States government authorities, specifically the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Israeli Mossad. Overwhelmingly documented. The crime of Lynn Stewart is to expose and defy. The crime of Lynn Stewart is to seek to facilitate exposure of the real role of the blind sheikh whose life was in Egypt, not in the United States, whose political life had no relation to events in the United States. This is the perjury of the judge, fabricating an intent to enhance something called terrorism. And in particular, the perjury of the judge and of the courts in relation to the realities of the evidence are designed to facilitate a big lie.
Ralph, even with the case of the Liberty City Seven, which, as I said, the prosecution persisted until he could find a jury that was going to convict. The deputy director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation at the time, John S. Pistole, described the group's plot as more, quote, aspirational than operational. He admitted that the group didn't have the means to carry out such attacks on these targets. And this is the case over and again with each of the so-called terror plots. This leads us to the revelations of last week by Dana Priest and William Arkin in the Washington Post, which was their several-year investigation of top secret America, as they say, a hidden world going beyond control. They write, July 19th in the Washington Post, the top secret world the government created in response to the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001 has become so large, so unwieldy, and so secretive that no one knows how much money it costs, how many people it employs, how many programs exist within it, or exactly how many agencies do the same work. Ralph.
The investigation's findings include 1,271 government organizations, 1,931 private corporations working on programs of counterterrorism, homeland security, and intelligence in over 10,000 locations across the United States, 854,000 people, one and a half times as many as those who live in Washington, D.C., hold top secret security clearances. In Washington and the surrounding area alone, there are 33 building complexes for this top secret intelligence work. They occupy the equivalent of three pentagons, 22 United States Capitol buildings, 17 million square feet of space. Security and intelligence agencies do the same work, And in fact, 51 federal organizations and military commands in 15 U.S. cities are carrying on duplicatory work tracking the flow of money to and from networks that are engendered by this same apparatus. Analysts who try to make sense of these documents and conversations by publishing 50,000 intelligence reports each year are engaged in producing paper of a volume so large that most is routinely ignored. In fact, there has been, quote, so much growth since 9/11 that getting your arms around that, not just for the Director of National Intelligence, but for any individual, for a Director of the CIA, for the Secretary of Defense, is virtually impossible. And now we have what are called, under this documentation, the super users who know Department of Defense secrets. Two-thirds of the intelligence programs reside in the hands of senior officials called super users, who have the ability to know about these activities. But as two of the super users indicate, there is no way they can keep up with any of this information, or its volume, or its continuity on such a vast scale. Now, what we have to look at here is not merely what programs are seeking to show as duplicatory or involving privatization or involving an inefficiency when it comes to tracking down the actual terror threat. All of that is liberal folderol, frankly speaking. The real issue and the critical issue is that this entire vast arsenal of government operation, the so-called war on terror, the enormous bureaucracy associated with it, are about lies, fabrications, inventions, the biggest con in the history of the country.
And more so, Ralph, this is no longer a surveillance state, as often Great Britain is described. What we have here is a terror state, the terror of the state apparatus upon the citizens of the United States. And this is especially clear when you look at the recent Supreme Court decision. The 12-year legal struggle of the Humanitarian Law Project, led by USC Professor Ralph Fertig, a very famous case and one that has a great deal of implication for each and every one of us who does solidarity work with the struggles internationally, and implications here in the United States, too, with all political activity. This is the case of Eric Holder, of whom we are going to speak more, versus the Humanitarian Law Project. It was the most anticipated war on terrorism decision. It was brought by the Humanitarian Law Project and several California-based groups, and discusses what is material support for terrorism. It was a 6-3 vote, and it was written by Chief Justice John Roberts for the majority. What he said is that Congress and the executive branch are uniquely positioned to make principled distinctions between activities that will further terrorist conduct and undermine United States foreign policies and those that will not. That a foreign terrorist organization introduced to the structures of the international legal system might use the information to threaten, manipulate, and disrupt. This possibility is real, not remote. Specifically, the case brought by the Humanitarian Law Project concerned whether the Humanitarian Law Project was giving material support if it gave advice on how to approach the United Nations or do other above-board legal work for the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam or the PKK, the Partida Karkaran Kurdistan, that is the Kurdish independence movement, particularly based in Turkey. The 1996 law governing material support for terrorism makes it a crime, punishable now by 15 years in prison, to provide training, expert advice or assistance, service or personnel to designated terrorist groups. And the PKK and the Tamil Tigers are on that terrorism list. Ralph.
Fundamental to this discussion, and preceding even this attempt to invent the category of material support for terrorism, which means in practice expose of the government's role in creating terror, which means in practice defending those innocent of charges by the U.S. government. Material aid to terror means exposing the government's crimes. Material aid to terror means defending the innocent against false charges. The Nation magazine, in an important article by Robert Dreyfus, goes much further than do the nominal critics of the top secret information disclosed in the Washington Post. The article on July 19th is called "Huge Fly Swatter, No Flies to Secret America's Vast Counterterrorism Machine." Top Secret America's Vast Counterterrorism Machine. Robert Dreyfus discloses, the reporting does not reflect the fact that there are no terror operations, that this vast counterterrorism machine is about nothing. He writes, what is missing from this story is any assessment of this so-called threat. The Washington Post notes, says Dreyfus, that 25 separate agencies have been set up to track terrorist financing. But the article barely mentions that there are hardly any terrorists to track. What the Nation says is that it is an emperor new clothes problem. The emperor isn't naked, but nobody is threatening him. What the Nation has done here is to expose the fact that the entire war on terror and this vast, overwhelming, repressive apparatus is about a big lie, that there is no terror threat, that nobody is engaged in this except the United States government itself. And that goes to Greenwald's article, The Real U.S. Government, The Vast Secret Madhouse. Most of what the United States government does occurs behind a vast wall of secrecy, completely unknown to the citizenry. Secrecy is the religion of the political class and the prime enabler of its corruption. But the secret content of that corruption, brothers and sisters, is that the terror is the terror of the United States itself. The terror of 9/11 is the crime of the intelligence services, the military, the FBI, the CIA, and the Mossad.
Ralph, we need to go back to the Humanitarian Law Project versus Holder because of the far-reaching effects of this Supreme Court decision. When Justice Roberts stated, quote, training and advising a designated terrorist organization on how to take advantage of the international entities might benefit that organization in a way that facilitates its terrorist activities, he is covering most actions involving the struggles of oppressed peoples around the world. It was so extreme that Justice Stephen Breyer, writing for the dissent, that is himself, Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, gave his dissent aloud, something unusual for the Supreme Court. He stated, quote, all the activities involve the communication and advocacy of political ideas and lawful means of achieving political ends, end quote. Because, in effect, as even the New York Times noted in an understated editorial on June 22nd called A Bruise on the First Amendment, what the court has done is to make it illegal for even journalists to meet with representatives of the so-called terrorist groups to write about their activities or their motivations. This suspends reporting internationally for the U.S. press. Let's look at who Eric Holder is, the attorney general who fostered this decision. Eric Holder had been the lawyer for Chiquita Brands International, previously called United Fruit. This $655 million fruit giant, the banana king, pleaded guilty and paid a $25 million fine in an agreement with the Justice Department for providing material support financial support between 1997 and 2004, that's a seven-year period, to the death squads in Colombia, the AUC, noted on the State Department terrorism list at the time. Chiquita knew they were on the terrorism list, and it provided over a seven-year period, $1.7 million and probably more to this death squad that destroyed unions, terrorized workers, and killed thousands of Colombians. Ralph?
Leader of death squads wins Colombian election. A role model for Latin America. Juan Manuel Santos, the notorious defense minister in the regime of outgoing President Alvaro Uribe, closely identified with high crimes against humanity, quote, won the presidential election, supported by the United States, by Barack Obama, and by Eric Holder, the attorney general. The major electronic and print media, CNN, Fox News, and the Washington Post, and the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal, and the Financial Times, hailed the election of the death squad leader as a great victory for democracy. 20,000 people were killed in the course of this election. Several of the most important paramilitary death squad leaders testified that 60 of the congresspeople back in Uribe were under their control. The Uribe Santos double-crossed their narco death squad comrades. Over 2,000 to trade unionists and human rights activists, journalists, and congresspeople were murdered by death squad hitmen servicing this regime.
And Ralph, the Chiquita Company not only funded the death squads, they provided arms and ammunition. That is, they provided weaponry and other forms of material support.
Death lists.
And what does Attorney General Eric Holder, who was then the Washington attorney representing Chiquita, state at the time? Quote, there's absolutely no suggestion of any personal gain here, end quote. That is Eric Holder. Eric Holder's Justice Department that dares to go after Lynn Stewart. Eric Holder, who is defending the executives who got off scot-free. The Justice Department didn't prosecute these executives even after it investigated them, and accepts a little bit of money to assuage the guilt of this company for killing thousands of people. This is Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, responsible for the Justice Department.
The article by Dan Kovalik, the counsel for the Trade Union and Human Rights Organizations, quote, the lawyer for Chiquita in death squad case may be next United States Attorney General. An article in Huffington Post. In fact, what he documents is the following. It is not only that Eric Holder, carrying out his corporate law practice of Covington and Burling, would become the Attorney General of the United States, but Eric Holder was the legal facilitator of Chiquita's death squad operations in Colombia. He created the lying and fabricated defense that Chiquita, none of its executives should be prosecuted because the money they were paying to the death squads was intended only to prevent their own employees from being killed. When the record shows, and what Eric Holder's own knowledge included, was that Chiquita was providing the death lists and that thousands upon thousands of human rights activists, of peasants, of village leaders, of trade unionists were being systematically hunted down and murdered over a period of long years. Thousands upon thousands of people massacred in with mass graves across Colombia. Eric Holder is an accessory after the fact in the death squad operations in Colombia. Eric Holder, as the Attorney General of the United States, is in fact terrorist in chief.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The War on Terror Exposed. Who are the real terrorists?
Maya, before Eric Holder became Attorney General of the United States under Barack Obama, in 1997 he was Deputy Attorney General. In 2001, he was the acting Attorney General for George Bush before being succeeded by John Ashcroft. It is not only Chiquita that Eric Holder was defending. And we should remind our listeners that Chiquita is United Fruit. Since 1927, United Fruit has been carrying out death squad operations across Central America and Latin America. In 1954, it was United Fruit and the Central Intelligence Agency that carried out the coup against Arbenz and the slaughter of people across Guatemala. 50,000 people were murdered by the death squads of United Fruit in Guatemala. Del Monte, represented by Eric Holder. Dole Pineapple, represented by Eric Holder. Coca-Cola, represented by Eric Holder. The oil conglomerates involved in the death squad funding, represented by Eric Holder. Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, and his Commander-in-Chief, Barack Obama, who I again would designate not Commander-in-Chief, but in the light of this record, terrorist-in-chief, are those who are insisting upon the multi-decade imprisonment of Lynn Stewart and characterizing Lynn Stewart as an enhancer of terrorism when, as I repeat, AUC on the terrorist watch list of the State Department is the vehicle, the death squad instrument, funded by the client of Eric Holder, and Eric Holder engaged in material support not only for AUC and for Chiquita, but in fabricating lies about the motives of Chiquita in funding these death squad operations across Colombia. Free Trade Obama and Colombia's Death Squad Killings, writes the In These Times article by Roger Bybee. It is not only through Chiquita. The Banana War by Kevin Gray in the Democratic Underground. Chiquita Chief Executive Cyrus Friedheim, now CEO of Sun Times Media Group, and former Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Roderick Hills, who served on Chiquita's boards, and Carla Hills, who served as the United States Trade Representative under President H.W. Bush, Colombia's Attorney General Mario Igarán, are all these people involved in these operations? This is a structured operation of Death Squadiana across not only Colombia, but Latin America.
Ralph, as the Supreme Court stated, the executive branch can determine who are the terrorists. Well, the executive branch recognizes, as you mentioned before, the Colombian election. The Colombian election where the leader of the death squads was elected president, that is, the notorious defense minister, Juan Manuel Santos. And it's clear, if you look at the Santos election, that there was abstention of the rural poor and the urban poor from this election. During the Santos administration, over 2,000 trade unions, human rights activists, journalists, and congresspeople critical of the Uribe Santos administration, Uribe having been president at the time, were murdered by death squads, hitmen who were serving the regime. This is accepted as appropriate by the United States. And also in keeping with this is the recognition by the Pentagon now of the Indonesian death squads, which have been exposed by the human rights activists and which pressured the United States to stop funding the Indonesian death squads. And now the United States is returning, the Pentagon is returning to accepting the Indonesian death squads, part of the Indonesian army. Ralph.
Eric Holder succeeded in having the Chiquita executives avoid prosecution and avoid indictment and avoid imprisonment and avoid being brought to justice for the documented execution of 4,000 trade union leaders, brothers and sisters. 4,000 people. He not only was doing this for Chiquita, Eric Holder was doing it for Halliburton. Eric Holder was doing it for Southern Peru Copper. And finally, brothers and sisters, on this particular subject, January 28, 2010, the Army mass grave in La Macarena, Miami's El Nuevo Herald and Spain's Pablico have run stories about a shocking find in Macarena, 200 miles south of Bogota. Residents say that it entered the strongly controlled zone in the mid-2000s. Colombia's army has been dumping unidentified bodies in mass graves near a local cemetery adjacent to a major U.S. controlled military base with U.S. Special Forces and Colombian troops active. The grave may contain as many as 2,000 bodies. In fact, there are many more. Since 2005, the Army, whose elite units are deployed in these areas, has been depositing behind the local cemetery thousands of cadavers with the order that they be buried without names. Jurist Jairo Ramirez, the Secretary of the Permanent Committee for the Defense of Human Rights, accompanied the delegation of British legislators to the site when the magnitude of La Macarena grave began to be discovered. Quote, what we saw was chilling, he told Pablico, an infinity of bodies, and on the surface of thousands of white wooden plaques with the inscription NN, name unknown. The armor commander told us that they were guerrillas killed in combat. But the people in the region told us that they were social leaders, campesinos, community human rights defenders, students, village leaders, trade unionists who have been disappearing without a trace in their thousands. A spokesman of the Prosecutor General's office in Bogota revealed that a mission from that institution's technical investigation corps had gone to the cemetery and confirmed the existence of a vast number of cadavers. La Macarena, the site of the grave, has been a very important site of U.S. military operations since the mid-2000s. The U.S. government supported and advised the Colombia Army's 2004 to 2006 Plan Patriota, the military offensive, and integral to this military offensive were the massacres. Brothers and sisters, the massacres became disclosed because the nearby village children were becoming sick from the water they were drinking, contaminated by the body fluids of thousands of murdered people. These were the operations, not just of the death squads. They were the specific operations of United Fruit's successor, Chiquita. This is the reality of AUC being designated a terrorist organization by the State Department. This is the organization for which Eric Holder is not only the mouthpiece, but the collaborator. Attorney General of the United States? Prosecutor of Lynn Stewart? No! Terrorist in chief!
Ralph, to speak about death squads, we now should turn to the United States and the death squads. Official death squads, as revealed in great detail through the WikiLeaks documents. There are 90,000 documents, 72,000 have been placed on the internet. They were first given to Der Spiegel, The Guardian, and The New York Times a few weeks ago, embargoed until last Sunday when WikiLeaks put them up for all the world to see. We'll be discussing these in further weeks, but let's now turn to Task Force 373. Task Force 373, the official U.S. Death Squad unit. As written in The Guardian by Nick Davis, the NATO coalition in Afghanistan has been using an undisclosed black unit of special forces, Task Force 373, to hunt down targets for death or detention without trial. Details of more than 2,000 senior figures from the Taliban and Al-Qaeda are held on a kill or capture list known as JPEL, or the Joint Prioritized Effects List. Now, this list of 2,000 so-called senior figures is compiled after the fact. If you listen to the high-level diplomatic spokespersons of the United States and other countries, the NATO forces, you understand that there aren't 2,000 senior figures of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, but only a handful of people who they would even consider Taliban and Al-Qaeda. But as Davies writes, in many cases, the unit has set out to seize a target for internment, but in others, it has simply killed them without attempting to capture. The logs reveal that TP-373 has killed civilian men, women, and children, and Afghan police officers. The UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights, Philip Alston, went to Afghanistan in May 2008 to investigate extrajudicial killings. What happened with this? Nothing. Task Force 373, which changes its name often, is a combination of Navy SEALs and the Delta Force. It is a lethal death squad, beholden to the executive, the Pentagon and the executive. That is, it goes directly up to Barack Obama. Ralph?
Yes, Maya. Death squads in Colombia, Task Force 373, death squads and systematic murder across Afghanistan as before in Iraq. These are terror operations by the state on a vast and orchestrated and organized scale, infecting and affecting not tens but hundreds of thousands of people, brothers and sisters, authorized from the top. But I want to put this in a very specific context. 373, death squads in Afghanistan, has to be put in a very particular context, brothers and sisters, because a major epidemiological study published by the International Journal of Environmental Studies and Public Health has found in its new study Cancer, Infant Mortality, and Birth-Sex Ratio in Fallujah, Iraq, 2005 to 2009, the people of Fallujah have higher rates of cancer, radiation poisoning, leukemia, infant mortality, and birth deformities and sexual mutations than those recorded amongst survivors in Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined after those Japanese cities were incinerated by the United States atomic bombs in 1945. The assault on Fallujah, one of the most horrific war crimes of our time, after the population had resisted the U.S.-led occupation of Iraq, a war of neocolonial plunder launched on the basis of the same kinds of lies that characterize the conduct of the United States officialdom in Colombia and in Afghanistan. What was done in Fallujah to create a rate of leukemia 38 times higher, a childhood cancer rate 12 times higher, a breast cancer rate 10 times higher than in populations in any of the surrounding areas, heightened levels of adult lymphoma, brain tumors, 80 out of 1,000 births with birth deformity, and infant mortality rates 5 times higher than in any of the surrounding areas, 8 times higher than in Kuwait. What is going on here? Well, radioactive weapons, depleted uranium, the deliberate devastation of Fallujah, a war crime of enormous magnitude. What is the relevance of this? Who is the man who Barack Obama has put in charge of the U.S. Central Command in Afghanistan? Overall command of U.S. forces in Afghanistan and Iraq and across the Middle East and Central Asia. Marine Corps General James N. Mattis. The elevation of Mattis was further confirmation that the firing of General Stanley McChrystal and the temporary appointment of David Petraeus was signaling a major escalation of U.S. military violence. Let's look at James Mattis. Speaking at a public forum in San Diego, Mattis stated, "It is a hell of a lot of fun to shoot Afghans. Actually, it's a lot of fun to fight. It's a hell of a hoot to shoot people. I'll be right up front with you. I like shooting people. I like brawling. You get an enormous emotional satisfaction when you whack somebody." In his 2006 book, Fiasco, The American Military Adventure in Iraq, Thomas Ricks writes, "The Marine commander, James Mattis, gave his troops a slogan by which to live. Be polite, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet." In his speech, Task Force Ripper during the Desert Storm, he stated, "It is the mission of every Marine to send one dead Iraqi home to Mama." What is the meaning of the elevation of this fascistic killer to the overall command of two major wars, covert and overt military operations in Yemen and Somalia, and the planning of new wars? What is the significance of his role now in Afghanistan? To understand that, brothers and sisters, we have to look at the role of James Mattis in relation to Fallujah. He commanded the Battle of Fallujah. He was in charge of Operation Vigilant Resolve. He was responsible for Operation Phantom Fury. He implemented the devastation of Fallujah with radiation, with tactical nuclear weapons, with depleted uranium. He is responsible for the atrocity of the devastation of Fallujah. They surrounded Fallujah. Anybody who left Fallujah was then sealed out from returning. Everybody who remained in Fallujah was sealed in, subject not just to saturation bombing, to white phosphorus, to depleted uranium. Horrific scenes from the ashes of Fallujah, the report on 18th of November 2004. Fallujah has been laid waste. It is a hell on earth of shattered bodies, shattered buildings, and the stench of death. The city will enter history as the place where United States imperialism carried out a crime of immense proportions in November 2004. Crimes on the scale of Lidice, crimes on the scale of the Warsaw Ghetto, crimes on the scale of the great slaughters that have been inflicted by Nazi and fascist and other brutal forces over the course of history. A small glimpse of the horror the assault has meant for the people of the city. Images of photojournalists working for agencies. Mortuary teams collecting the dead. Fallujah infants shot in the head. Whole families gutted. The entire population buried alive under rubble. A saturation bombing of such magnitude, with weapons of such horror. Quote, "This exemplifies the horrors of war. We don't wish this on anyone," an officer overseeing the collection of the bodies told Associated Press. The indiscriminate U.S. bombing, the execution of all wounded, the killing of 12-year-old children, an operation no different than that carried out by the Nazis in Eastern Europe. The horrific scenes from the ashes of Fallujah are the responsibility of Mr. Mattis.
Ralph, half of the city's buildings were destroyed, most of them reduced to rubble. Fallujah today has no functioning sewage system. This is 6 years after the attack. Waste pours onto the street and seeps into the drinking water supplies, the report from the project of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs states. The director of the Fallujah General Hospital said that the sewage problem has taken its toll on resident health. They are increasingly affected by diarrhea, tuberculosis, typhoid, and other communicable diseases. This is on top of the fact that there are so many birth defects in Fallujah that the genetic results of the weaponry that was used, children born with extreme deformities, such as only one eye in the middle of their head. The people who did this report, the genetic report of the International Journal of Environmental Studies and Public Health, the Iraqi government was calling them terrorists as they were trying to survey the individuals in Fallujah. This team of researchers that was trying to uncover what is taking place were deemed terrorists. The Iraqi government, in conjunction with the United States, tried to block this effort. Not just in Fallujah, we saw this happen in Bosnia, and we will see it happen in Afghanistan too, where the planes are dropping 500-pound bombs, massive firepower throughout Afghanistan. But meanwhile, what we have uncovered, aside from the massive firepower of the U.S. arsenal, we have these targeted death squads, such as Task Force 373, and the Task Force 373 special prison known as the Bagram Theater Internment Facility, where people are buried alive. And this is in keeping with the order of General Petraeus that there would be covert death squads, the secret order of September 2009, supported by President Barack Obama, that there would be targeted assassinations throughout the world, the network of covert task forces and intelligence gathering units, which will, quote, penetrate, disrupt, defeat, or destroy, end quote, any target within any country designated by the U.S. military. The forces will carry out clandestine operations, which cannot or will not be accomplished through other military means. They'll prepare the environment for full-scale assaults, and particularly among the countries were Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Somalia. But as we can see, these joint unconventional warfare task force with an executive order, that this can take place anywhere in the world.
The deputy to Mattis in the operations of Fallujah was Ilario Pantano, Marine commander. Carrying out an operation on April 15, 2004, Pantano led his platoon against a compound near the town of Mahmoudia. As the platoon approached the compound, they saw a vehicle with two Iraqi men. Pantano ordered the men to stop the vehicle and asked them and ordered them to search the vehicle for weapons. They found no weapons. Pantano became enraged. He then began to search the vehicle and came away with a claim of finding a cache of arms which had not existed before. Lieutenant Pantano made the following decision. During the search of the vehicle, he concluded that the Iraqis were a threat. They were talking to each other. They must be conspiring together. He then ordered them to kneel in front of them with their heads on the ground. He proceeded to fire 80 rounds of ammunition. I fired both magazines into two men, hitting them with 80% of my rounds and a total of 80 rounds. It was impossible to do a post-mortem examination on the corpses. The witnesses to this reported what had occurred. He was actually tried for murder, and he was immediately exonerated by the Marines and by the military and by the intervention of Mattis. In fact, he became celebrated for his execution of these two innocent men, and he utilized the opportunity to write an autobiography called Warlord, No Better Friend, No Worse Enemy. He is now a candidate for Congress. He is a member of the Association of Los Angeles County Deputy Sheriffs. He is, in fact, a defender of the use of the military for operations like those in Fallujah in all parts of the world, as he puts it in his own words. Pantano and Mattis, the direct agents of Barack Obama. Barack Obama and Eric Holder, directors of death squads from Colombia to 373 in Afghanistan. Terrorists in chief. Not commander in chief. Not attorney general of the United States. Terrorists in chief. And the courts that facilitate their lies. And the courts that implement the framing of innocent people for the crimes of the U.S. rulers perjure themselves every time they open their mouths. They are perjurers, they are facilitators, they are agents of a state, a criminal state, that is waging war against the peoples of the world.
This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, The War on Terror Exposed, Who Are the Real Terrorists, will be on our website, www.takingaimradio.com. You can reach us at takingaim@wbai.org or takingaim@pacbell, pacbell.net. We'll be with you next week. Tikki tikki no bi ay, nuna ramato tikki na wado wow. Tikki tikki no bi ay, ta tam ta chila paro ta tam ta. Silo ndok ni